A senior Iranian commander says Iran will definitely defeat the schemes of the U.S. and its Western and region allies aimed at sowing discord in the country through inciting riots. The Hamas resistance movement warning Israel against a new wave of assassination of its leaders in the besieged Gaza Strip. Venezuelan government and the opposition signed a social protection agreement. The two have resumed talks on ending the political crisis in the Latin American country. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Good to have you with us. Our top story this hour, the chief commander at the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps is warning of plots by the U.S., the U.K., Israel, and Saudi Arabia to sow discord and division in Iran through inciting riots. Major General Hossein Salami says that Iran will definitely defeat any such schemes.
Definitely, this new battlefront where seditions are taking place and this world war, we will turn this place into a graveyard for the policies of the U.S., Israel, and their allies. This is our determination.
Now, addressing crowds of people in the southeastern city of Zahedan, Major General Salami called for unity in the face of plots and warned against playing into enemies' hands. He noted that the history of the U.S. and the U.K. are replete with crimes and aggression, and the two now want to restore their political, economic, and cultural dominance over Iran. According to General Salami, the American, British, Israeli, and Saudi leaders are a united front, while the Iranian people and security forces are the opposite front facing them. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has rejected negotiations with the United States, saying that talks with Washington would not bear any fruit. Ayatollah Ali Khamenei said that Iran's problems with America can only be resolved by allowing Washington to hold Iranians to ransom. The leader warned that in order to put an end to antagonism, the U.S. wants Iran to abandon its nuclear program, change its constitution, and to restrict its influence within its own borders. Ayatollah Ali Khamenei added that no Iranian can accept such conditions. He made those comments in an address to a group of besieged force members in the capital, Tehran. The leader said that the besieged force should be well aware of the country's main enemy, that's the global arrogance. Ayatollah Khamenei added that enemies are trying to spread lies and fake news and paint a dark picture of Iran, and that's because the U.S. wants to dominate the minds of Iranian people. The leader referred to the victory of Iran's Islamic Revolution in 1979 and said that revolution tipped the balance against the arrogant powers in West Asia, dealing a heavy blow to their colonialist agenda. The leader added that the creation of the usurper Israeli regime was in line with those policies to maintain dominance over the region. Now, Hakima Bire is an academic and political analyst, and she joined us a while ago with her take on the speech of the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution and the occasion of the Besiege Week.
When you look at the U.S. history of relations with other countries, you see that the United States looks at the countries around the world in as one of two cases. One is a client country and the other is an enemy country. An enemy is a country that systematically acts independent of the United States, doesn't want to give ransom to the United States, and looks for its own interests rather than trying to take care of the interests of the United States in its region. That is the role that the clients play. Now, Iran, with its revolution, became one of the main enemies of the United States. That is not what we did, but that is what the United States eyes, Iran becomes an enemy just by having a revolution that makes it independent. So here, there are two scenarios. One is that a country is weak enough for the United States to be able to overthrow it, as you know the United States has done in some countries where they had revolutions. For example, in Congo, they had a revolution. They had an independence from the Belgians. And then over a period of 1 year, you know, they had a coup and they removed Patrice Lumumba and they killed him and everything was over, okay? And they had a friendly government, so to speak. But sometimes you have a country like Iran, which is more resilient. that doesn't, you know, old tactics sometimes don't work. So you need to have a step-by-step and a more hybrid scenario for dealing with that country. And that is what has happened with Iran, that from the beginning, many different, you know, instruments have been used. One of them is negotiations, so to call. But I would like to say that it is not negotiations, but it is coercive diplomacy.
Other news, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas issued a fresh warning to Israel against launching a new campaign of assassinations targeting its leaders in the Gaza Strip. Now, Hamas says that the move will result in a new wave of suicide attacks against the regime across the occupied lands. The movement is also warning that any act of aggression against the Gaza Strip will trigger a conflict that will bring the entire Israeli-held territory under resistance forces' attacks. Israel has blamed Hamas for rare bombings that hit the occupied al-Quds earlier this week, killing two Israelis and injuring more than a dozen others. The regime has implied that it could respond by targeting Hamas officials, but the movement says that Tel Aviv is trying to escape domestic pressure by setting off a conflict with Gaza. A member of the Israeli Knesset is escalating tensions in Al-Quds City in the West Bank by calling for extrajudicial execution of Palestinian resistance leaders. And this in the wake of the two bombings in Al-Quds City. The double bombing was the first in that city in years.
Itamar Ben-Gvir, a far-right member of the Israeli Knesset, has called for the extrajudicial executions. He is now to become Israel's Minister of National Security, giving him much more power than he had before. That power is quickly turning into a tool for him to pursue his extremist anti-Arab agendas. Just to put the extremism into perspective, Ben-Gvir and his allies hope to grant total immunity to Israeli soldiers who shoot at Palestinians and also impose the death penalty on Palestinians who attack Jewish people. For even more perspective, he made the headlines just before the Israeli elections as he called on the police to shoot Palestinian stone throwers as he held a pistol in his hand. Now being in charge of the Ministry of National Security, he has the power to implement his racist agendas that he's been advocating for years. Ben-Gvir's far-right party is called Otzma Yehudit, which translates into Jewish power. This party also has been fittingly called Kahanist and anti-Arab. Kahanist because the members of this party owe a lot of their racist ideologies to a racist rabbi by the name of Meir Kahane. He had called for a ban on Arab-Jewish intermarriage as well as mass expulsion of Palestinians. His ideas were in fact so repugnant that the US listed his party as a terrorist group and he was even banned from Israeli parliament, the Knesset. He was unsurprisingly assassinated by an Arab in 1990. His ideologies, however, live on as Itamar Ben-Gvir recently paid his tribute at an annual memorial still held to this date to revive the Otzma Yehudit party's pledge of allegiance to the slain Jewish supremacist rabbi.
He never since disowned Rabbi Meir Kahane or his legacy. In this passive regard, he's part of that racist legacy, but he was never caught saying anything like that publicly himself. That is why he remains within the political arena and in recent years also much more firmly within it.
While Ben-Gvir was booed by the audience for saying, "I am not Rabbi Kahane and I do not support the deportation of all Arabs," he did also say, "Ultimately, Rabbi Kahane was about love. Love for Israel without compromise, without any other consideration." He was cheered later for vowing to expel what he called terrorists from Israel. With his newfound power alongside Benjamin Netanyahu and his Likud party, Israel is expected to have its most religious cabinet to date, which in Zionist terms means the most extremist Israeli administration to date.
Now, fears are growing over how this new Israeli administration, whose security falls under the reins of a deeply problematic zealot, can worsen the tensions in Al-Quds and the West Bank. Tensions that have already been on the rise as a result of expansion of illegal settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories. The twin blasts further expose Israel's security lapse.
know that tensions are going to be heightened with the installment of Ben-Gvir from his most recent visit to the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the city of Al-Quds. During his visit, protected by Israeli police, he shouted that we are the masters of the house here, almost to provoke a response from Palestinians. But Palestine isn't scared. Israel, however much it tries to portray itself as an impenetrable fortress, has never known peace since the occupation began in 1948. Even though it has struck normalization deals with certain Arab nations, trying to dethrone the issue of Palestine as the number one concern in the Muslim world, and even though it is backed to the hilt by the US and EU, whether politically or militarily, Israel is far from the safe haven it likes to portray itself as being. What has been happening in the occupied West Bank, with Israel's efforts to repress protests with brutal violence, indicates that the Palestinian liberation struggle is entering a new phase, when once extremist fringe settlers are now seeing themselves represented at the top levels of Israeli administrations and are backed by the police, they become emboldened and extremely brash and out of control. Neighborhoods in Al-Quds have seen Palestinians burning tires and dumpsters and throwing firecrackers at raiding Israeli forces and even lighting police vehicles on fire. The complete immunity of Israel and the empty gestures by international bodies is pushing Palestinians into a full-scale revolt, a third intifada perhaps. If that were to happen, Israel's luck might just run out this time in their effort to save face on the international sphere, and if they do lose face, the conflict will take a very different shape.
Okay, moving on. Turkey has resumed air raids on Syria after a three-day lull. The latest attacks targeted Aleppo countryside, an area held by Kurdish forces. No casualties reported. Ankara launched a campaign of airstrikes across parts of Iraq and Syria on November 20th, following a bombing in Istanbul a week earlier that killed six people. Turkey blamed that bombing at the Kurdistan Workers' Party that's designated a terrorist group by the European Union and the United States. Kurdish groups deny any involvement in the Istanbul attack. Both Syrian and Iraqi governments have condemned the raids, with Damascus calling Turkey's airstrikes a breach of international law and sovereignty. The Venezuelan government and the opposition groups have reached an agreement as the two sides resume talks to end the political crisis in that country. The accord marks a breakthrough after 15 months of a stalemate between President Maduro's government and the opposition. It focuses on education, health, food security, flood response, and electricity programs. The agreement paves the way for the UN to oversee a trust fund of frozen assets of the Maduro government to be used for a variety of social projects in Venezuela. The opposition is seeking free and fair presidential elections next due in 2024. Caracas wants the international community to recognize Maduro as a rightful president and to lift sanctions mostly imposed by the U.S. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un says his country's ultimate goal is to possess the world's most powerful nuclear force. Kim called for a limitless bolstering of his country's defense capabilities to describe building the North's nuclear force as essential for protecting dignity and sovereignty of the state. Kim and his daughter were at an event celebrating the launch of Pyongyang's latest intercontinental ballistic missile. The missile called Hwasong-17 was successfully tested on the 18th of November and is believed to be capable of reaching the U.S. mainland. Kim has held the new ICBM as the world's most strategic weapon. South Korea and its Western allies have been warning for some time that North is preparing to conduct its seventh nuclear test. Pakistan's former Prime Minister Imran Khan and his supporters have assembled near Islamabad, urging the government to step down and hold fresh elections. In his first public address since being shot in an assassination attempt earlier this month, Khan promised to fight to the last drop of his blood. Nasser Kazemi reports.
Tens of thousands of activists from Imran Khan's PTI party, who came from all across Pakistan, chanted anti-government slogans demanding immediate elections, accusing the government for what they called following U.S.-backed policies. The protesters held the ruling party responsible for the current economic crisis. They said Imran Khan is the only leader who could bring political and economic stability to Pakistan.
Our leader Imran Khan is fighting with the corrupt mafia who was brought by the US. Our struggle is for the rule of law in the country, and that is only possible when Imran Khan will be in power.
Having survived an assassination attempt during his anti-government march on the 3rd of November, former Prime Minister Imran Khan joined the protesters in person for the first time in 3 weeks amid stringent security. Khan told his supporters that although his life is under threat, he will continue his political struggle until his demands are met.
This imported government was brought to a U.S. conspiracy for corruption purposes. We will not accept this puppet regime, and we will fight till the end for fresh polls. We will dissolve our provincial governments in Punjab and Khyber Pakhtunkhwa provinces in days to come.
While calling Khan's long march a flop show, the government says that it will complete its constitutional term and the electoral process will be held at its scheduled time. Imran Khan's supporters say the recent massive mass rallies indicate Imran Khan's increasing popularity in his political domain. However, it is highly believed that his party will face tough political competition if the scheduled general elections are held according to the government's plan. Nasir Kazmi in Islamabad.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of first six. My dad, who taught me the art of
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, November 27th, 2022. I'm Atefe Irfani hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our programs. Tell us what program or programs at IRIB English Radio you like the best. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special. Today is November 27th, and we are with you with another edition of Listeners Special. And here, I do send my appreciations to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Ivan A. Zeleni from Russia, Marsan Fritzen from Brazil, and Salvatore Righi from Italy. So, Ivan, Marsan, and Salvatore, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to your radio, IRIB English Radio. And for your information, these reception reports are very helpful for IRIB English Radio because these reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service for our great listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an electronic QSL from us. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and of course, we've received many emails and letters from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program, I will read these emails. From Belarus, we've received an email from Igor Belevich. Henry L. Omadhe from the Philippines has sent us an email. Mohammad Khaku, one of our old and regular listeners from the U.S., has sent us an email. From Sweden, we've received an email from Jan Thornblom. And the last but not the least in this edition of Listeners Special is an email from India from DK Sarkar. Stay with us, please. Welcome back. As I said, Igor Belevich from Belarus has sent us an email. Let's see what Igor says. Hello, my friends from the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I received your signals in Belarus in English on shortwave at 20 UTC. I'm glad to listen to IRIB in English on shortwave. I use analog SW radio receiver. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. And thank you very much for sending this email to your radio, IRIB English Radio. And we are very glad that you could receive the signals of IRIB English Radio. You know, we are also glad to have you as a listener. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL as a verification, Igor Belevich from Belarus. Wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And Mohammad Khaku from the US, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us an email. Let's see what he says. Buy Nothing Day is an international day of protest against consumerism. In North America, it is held the day after U.S. Thanksgiving concurrent to Black Friday. The negative effects of consumerism include the depletion of natural resources and pollution of the earth. The way the consumer society is working is not sustainable. We are currently overusing earth's natural resources by more than 70%. When you stop buying unnecessary things, you will start to feel better about yourself. You will see life and yourself in a whole new light. You will no longer be chained by the temptation of unnecessary spending. Muslims are advised to live modest lives and refrain from excessive consumption associated with Western values. The view of Islam is that all good things of this world are God's graces, which have been created for human being. First of all, salam and warmest greetings to you, Mohammad Khaku from the U.S. And please accept our appreciations and gratitudes to you for sending us this email This was great. Thank you for sharing your information about this day. I mean, Buy Nothing Day, which is an international day of protest against consumerism, which is rampant, actually, in the US, I think, and some of the European countries. And also, you had a great note. You said Muslims are advised to live modest lives and refrain from excessive consumption associated with Western values. That was a good point. Thank you for that. And thank you for sharing your experiences and information with us. Please write to us soon. We always welcome your attitudes, not only you, but also all our great listeners around the world. We wish you all the best, Muhammad Khaku from the US. And please accept our EQSL as verification. Welcome back. From Sweden, we've received an email from Jan Thornblom. Jan Thornblom from Sweden says, "Dear staff, as my hobby is listening to distant radio stations, I was very pleased to hear your station. The signal strength, quiet, okay, but a little unstable with some atmospheric noise and interference from a transmitter. Thank you very much for your nice programs. I hope you can identify your program through my reception report. If you found my report correct, I should be very glad to receive your QSL card, a letter or an email as a verification that I really have been listening to your nice and interesting station. I am 83 years old and I'm living in the central part of Malmo, which is a city located in the province Skåne in southern part of Sweden. I hope to hear from you soon. Best greetings." Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. Jan Thornblom from Sweden. And thank you very much for sending this kind email to your favorite radio station, IRIB English Radio. We're so glad that you were able to receive the signals of IRIB English Radio in your region, the central part of Malmo in Sweden. Thank you. Please write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL as a verification. And from the Philippines, we've received an email from Henry L. Umate. Let's see what Henry says. "Dear English Radio Team, or IRIB English Radio, greetings from Bacolod City, Central Philippines. I missed your broadcast in shortwave since I have difficulty listening to the frequency given. But in the past, I enjoyed listening to your shortwave broadcast. I am lucky to catch your online broadcast this evening via your website. Please kindly send me your frequency schedule of your shortwave broadcast. Thank you. More power to IRIB." Salam and warm greetings to you, Henry L. Umate from the Philippines. And thank you for sending this kind and great email to your favorite radio station, IRIB English Radio. We are very happy that you are able to receive the signals of IRIB English Radio in Bacolod City, Central Philippines. We are so glad for that. So, you had difficulty in receiving the signals of our radio for some time, but what about now? Are you able to receive them? Please tell us. And you referred to our website at www.parstoday.com/en. And there, because for your information, sending any material on behalf of our radio in the time of pandemic is not possible, you can refer to our website, as I said, at www.parstoday.com/en. You can find our frequency schedule and the archive of our programs there in the website. Anyway, thank you very much for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. Henry L. Umate from the Philippines, we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And please accept our electronic QSL as verification. ¶¶ Welcome back. As I said, from India, we've received an email from D.K. Sarkar. D.K. Sarkar from India says, I am a radio listener from India. I listen to your radio broadcast. I am sending herewith a brief audio file of your radio program. Kindly acknowledge this letter and verify my reception. Also, please send me, if possible, some information about your radio station. I shall be obliged if you please send me an EQSL. Thank you very much. D.K. Sarkar from India, salam and warm greetings to you. And thank you very much for sending this email to IRIB English Radio. So we've received your audio file of IRIB English Radio program. Thank you for that. For getting information about IRIB English Radio, you can refer to our website at www.parstoday.com/en. And there you can get some information about the programs that are broadcast in IRIB English Radio. So please accept our electronic QSL as verification. Thank you for writing to us. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And of course, we welcome any attitude toward IRIB English Radio or world developments. D.K. Sarkar from India. So you just heard a piece of beautiful traditional Iranian music, and art is long and time is short. Time to say goodbye, but before that, I do send my warm appreciations and gratitudes to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports as well as emails and letters from all around the world, including Ivan A. Zeleni from Russia, Marsan Fritzen from Brazil, Salvatore Righi from Italy, Mohammad Khaku from the US, D.K. Sarkar from India, Igor Belevich from Belarus, Jan Thornblom from Sweden, and Henry L. Omate from the Philippines. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with Listeners Special and IRIB English Radio. Goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.parstoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
This Monday. Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story. In
what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The problem with America can only be resolved by letting that country hold us to ransom. That is the view of Iran's leader when it comes to negotiations between Iran and the West, particularly the U.S. Making those comments in an address to a group of Basij Force members, he also said or pointed to the enormous voice of the nation that rang out earlier this month during pro-government demonstrations, stressing that enemies are trying to dominate minds and influence the world public opinion through spreading lies and fake news. Just some of the topics we'll be covering in this edition of The Spotlight. But first, let me introduce our guests. Kevin Barrett joins us. He's an editor at Veterans Today who joins us from Madison. Also joining us is Marcus Papadopoulos, historian, political analyst, and author.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. I first start with you, Kevin Barrett. The Iran's leader's address was received and was done at a forum where it consisted of the Basij forces, which are affiliated with the country's Revolutionary Guards. At the same time, they have been at the forefront of dealing with these rioters. And the sacrifice made by them was something that Iran's leader applauded, saying, quote, "You saw in these recent matters that the people of Basij sacrificed themselves to prevent the nation from succumbing to the force of a group of what he called rebels who were illiterate or enslaved people. And they sacrificed themselves to prevent the cruelty of another." The important role that they played is something that is not highlighted in terms of preventing, obviously, these security breaches, to say the least. How do you view that those comments made by Iran's leader on the Basij forces?
Well, this is something that most people in the West don't know anything at all about, and they don't understand that there are many, many millions of people in the Basij forces who are dedicated to upholding the Iranian constitution that makes Iran the world's first Islamic republic. And this group it's got a lot of different facets. It's got social welfare elements. The Basij people are also running educational institutions and doing education and working on all kinds of interesting projects, infrastructure and so on. And then they also are a sort of line of defense of the Islamic Republic. And here in the West, where it's sort of taken for granted in the mainstream media, which is largely dominated by the Zionist enemies of Iran, that Americans are supposed to support some kind of regime change in Iran, it's not understood to what extent that there is this big, well-organized base of support for the ideals of the Islamic Republic. And it's also not really recognized to what extent the relatively marginal forces opposing the Islamic Republic are, in fact, guilty of treason. In the same way that here in the United States, if we had groups that were taking money and weapons from other countries to try to overthrow the Constitution of the United States of America and put an end to the United States as a democratic republican experiment and instead turn us into a monarchy or a dictatorship or what have you, I mean, that would be the highest form of treason. And likewise, these Iranians who are trying to undermine their Islamic Republic are traitors. And fortunately, they're in a small minority. And there's, of course, a broad segment of opinion in Iran that's just people trying to get by in life, just like everywhere else. But the Basij group is really they're the forces, the boots on the ground. They're the popular group that's mobilized in support of the revolution. And they're probably the single biggest impediment in the path of these regime change plans that are coming out of Washington.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what Iran's leader has said regarding the riots, Marcus Papadopoulos. He said some are telling us in the newspapers, on the internet, that in order to put an end to these troubles, all you need to do, which started a few weeks ago, he said all that is needed is to resolve your problem with America and listen to the voice of the nation. But he has come out and also said that negotiating with will not resolve anything, and that resolving our problem with America can only be resolved by letting that country hold us to ransom. That ending statement there is what is being highlighted. What do you think the relevance of that is? What was he trying to say there, Iran's leader?
For the sake of Western audiences, let me say the following. Iran has been maligned, indeed demonized, by America for 43 years because ultimately in 1979, Iranians from all walks of life came together to liberate Iran from the yoke of American and British tyranny, which had, amongst other indignities, plundered Iran's national resources and had violated Iranian cultural and spiritual values. The problem in the West, specifically in America and in Britain, is that people in the aforementioned two countries view Iran through a Western prism, like how they view Israel through a Western prism. When I say to ordinary Westerners in person that Iranian soldiers helped to liberate Christian towns and villages in Syria from the control of either ISIS or Al-Qaeda, these people stare at me gormlessly. Indeed, no different to when I say to the average Westerner that during the conflict in Syria, the Israelis treated wounded Al-Qaeda fighters in Israeli hospitals. Again, the average Westerner whom I say that to looks at me in a gormless manner. So that really is a lesson in human psychology and demonstrates the extent to which the average person in the West has been brainwashed when it comes to Iran. Now, concerning the speech given today by Iran's supreme leader, yes, I agree with him. There is no reason as to why the Iranian government should sit down and negotiate with the Americans. It will not pay any dividends whatsoever. The most important thing for the Iranian government is to do what it has been doing for the last 43 years. Developing Iran's economy, providing jobs and homes and salaries and pensions and a welfare state to the Iranian people, and of course increasing Iran's military capacity to protect the Islamic Republic. Other than that, as I said, there is no reason why the Iranian government should sit down with the Americans. After all, the Americans for 43 years have been posing a knife to the throat of the Iranian people.
Well, Iran's leader has said, there, Kevin Barrett, that, you know, if we were to look at the negotiations, these riots that have occurred in the country is part of the pressure campaign that the West wants to Iran to compromise on a variety of issues when it comes to the negotiations. And he talked about some of which there are some deadlocked topics. For example, the U.S. wants Iran to abandon its nuclear program, change its constitution, restrict its influence to inside its borders, and to close its defense industries. So you're pretty much stripping a nation out of everything. And he says even if that's done, it's going to keep going into different demands and wanting different concessions from Iran. So pretty much saying that, you know, negotiating with the West is really not appropriate. How do you view that approach by Iran's leader? Do you agree with it?
Yes, I think the leader is right. Just as he was right in the past when he expressed skepticism about the JCPOA when it was being negotiated, he did allow the negotiators to make their best faith effort to reach an agreement, but he never really had faith that that was going to solve the problem. And that viewpoint was borne out by subsequent events after Trump tore up the JCPOA, completely shredded it and violated it. That showed that the leader's skepticism had been warranted. And today, of course, even stronger skepticism is even better warranted. We're seeing this regime change effort against Iran as the West, well, specifically Washington and Tel Aviv, with some help from London, are mobilizing every kind of force they possibly can to attack Iran through every means other than a declared war. You know, they're arming, you know, paid separatists and terrorists. You know, they've already been arming terrorists for a long time. You know, 17,000 Iranians have been murdered by these terrorists, especially the MEK, which is now a fully West-supported, Washington-supported group. But now they've really gone all out. And then these demands, of course, are ridiculous. Obviously, Iran is not going to completely disarm and not have any kinds of relationships with its allies in the region. That's ridiculous. Iran is the largest and, well, it shares with Turkey, I guess, the status of really the largest and most potentially important sort of geopolitical entity in the region. And because Iran is fully independent and sovereign, unlike Turkey, which is still, it's working at it, but it isn't quite there yet, Iran has a huge role to play. And this notion that Iran is going to just fold up its tent and sort of disappear is completely absurd. So the leader is absolutely right. There's no point in negotiating with these lunatics who are mounting this unsuccessful attempt to overthrow your country and overthrow your constitution through violence and terrorism and lies. So you just have to outlast them. And that strategy has worked so far, and it should work even better as we reach the end of the unipolar American empire and the rise of a new multipolar world that Iran will play a very important part in.
Marcus Papadopoulos, you talked about the way that the West views Iranians and Iran as a whole. And also, I believe you touched about that being a result of the way that the media has actually played a hand in that. Now, one thing that really stood out in this media landscape is what happened yesterday when we take a look at the win that Iran's team had against Wales, where you had these Saudi-funded, for example, TV station or a media channel by the name of Iran International, where they were demanding Iranians not to celebrate. They said you should not celebrate. They were telling them what to do, in other words, and that this was wrong, what happened. Of course, critiquing the Iranian soccer players and the team for participating in the World Cup, they even went as far as that. But the mere fact that they're demanding Iranians showed the true face of their, in a sense, as the word or the phrase has been thrown about, sinister plot by them in order to try to nail their version of how things should be. Doesn't that just reveal how low they have come in terms of trying to push their ideologies onto Iranians?
Well, as an overview, football, like other sports, is now in the vanguard of Western foreign policy. The World Cup is being used by the Western ruling elites to push for changes in countries such as Iran, countries which pursue an independent foreign policy and which do not bow down to the diktats of Washington. That is how sad the situation is, that the Western ruling elites have politicized sports. They have politicized the Olympics. Indeed, let me go one step further. The Western ruling elites have weaponized the World Cup, and they have weaponized the Olympics. The BBC football commentators were referring to the Iranian national football team as the, quote, regime's football team. And after the match between Iran and Wales, BBC journalists were attempting to ask political questions to Iranian national football players. Politics and sports, as any level-headed person would know, should be kept absolutely separate. But as I said moments ago, sports is now in the vanguard of Western foreign policy. But if we apply the logic of the BBC, who are attempting to ask political questions to Iranian football players, then why were American sports people and British sports people not asked political questions by the BBC or CNN Sure. or the Daily Telegraph or Channel 4 News about Britain and America's war against Serbia, or Britain and America's invasion of Iraq,
Indeed.
Or Britain and America's support of terrorists in Syria? Because if you're going to ask Iranian football players such questions, then of course the logic should be applied to British sports people and American sports people. And for the record, I do not believe that British sports people or American sports people should be subjected to political questioning.
Indeed.
But again, it shows the sheer how low the Western ruling elites have fallen to when it comes to persecuting Iran. And let's be very clear about it. Iran and the Iranian people are being persecuted by the West.
Well, the West is also not covering the news, if they were to be impartial, which they're not, Kevin Barrett, when it comes to an issue like the pro-government rallies that took place. We saw that it was in the tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, that showed up when there was, for example, security personnel that were martyred in Isfahan, for example, or when you had the former spy den, as we call it, of the former U.S. embassy, which we refer to as the spying den, of which you saw hundreds of thousands of people, not just showing up here in the capital, but around Iran. Those types of protests where there was a large presence was not covered by the media. In particular, of course, either the Saudi-funded news channel or the state-funded, UK state-funded BBC. Again, this is part of that shaping the image in a different way by the media. How would you rate their efficiency if that was their goal?
I think the Western media has discredited itself to a great extent with its increasingly biased and tendentious coverage of so many issues, including these issues that are of special importance to the Zionist masters of Western media, such as trying to neuter Iran, which is the last major country that's standing up for the Palestinians. And so the Western media already has shot itself in the foot so many times that it lost the power to prevent someone like Donald Trump from becoming president. Now, I'm not a fan of Donald Trump by any means, but it's interesting that he won the U.S. presidency in 2016 by attacking the mainstream media. And the reason that that worked for the first time in American history, prior to that, whenever the media went all out against anybody, they were finished. That happened to so many candidates for so many offices, including presidential offices, but it doesn't work anymore because so many Americans have awakened to the fact that mainstream media is dubious. So by going too far on these kinds of issues, I think that they are undermining their own credibility. And although the sort of rough agreement with these kinds of perspectives that they put out there in these kind of sneaky ways that sort of unconsciously infiltrate the minds of the viewers is it's still somewhat effective in terms of creating a general vague impression of what's going on. What they end up doing is manufacturing support that is proverbially a mile wide but an inch deep. And this coverage of the World Cup and that these, you know, it has been so anti-Islam, right? Hating on Muslim countries that have Muslim values that don't allow for hooligans to get drunk in the streets and beat people up, and that don't allow people to celebrate bizarre sexual and gender ideas. This kind of all-out propaganda that we're seeing, including against Iran, by completely suppressing coverage of these massive demonstrations, mourning the people that are, have been killed by these terrorists who are trying to overthrow the government of Iran, and on the contrary, on the other side of things, grossly exaggerating the people, you know, the size of the group of people that, that is working against Iran. All this kind of propaganda does in the long run is undermine the credibility of the media itself.
Sure. Israel, as Iran's leader referred to there, Marcus Papadopoulos, the usurper Israeli regime, is something that he said is in line with policies by the West, particularly the U.S., to have domination over the West Asia region in particular. And the question that I have is that has been in overdrive, and it's been like that for quite some time, vilifying Iran, creating Iranophobia, especially within the regional countries. We know that the U.S. has pushed Persian Gulf Arab countries to normalize ties with Israel, and they're vilifying Iran in order to have that unity and include and for Israel to be part of that. Of course, it's not really been that effective in a matter of speaking because not all have agreed to it. But do you think that's something that is working or that is not working to the way that they want it to?
Well, Israel is the main conduit for American power in West Asia. So one is not surprised whatsoever that Israel is one of the leading countries in attempting to overthrow the Iranian government and return Iran to how it was prior to 1979, namely a vassal state of the West. But I do believe that Iran is experiencing an increase in attempts by outside forces to weaken it, to subvert it, and to destroy it. And I am of the firm opinion that that is on account of Iran having a strategic partnership with Russia, and also on account of the war in Ukraine. Because the West, via NATO, is waging a proxy war against the Russian Federation. And Iran is a firm supporter of Russia and has shown sympathy for Russia's reasons for having militarily intervened in Ukraine. So it follows, therefore, that the West, in an attempt to weaken Russia in Ukraine, is attempting to weaken Iran at home, with the objective being as follows. If the Iranian government is overthrown and replaced by a pro-Western puppet one in Tehran, then Russia will lose a friend and ally of immense value, which can only weaken its position both at home in Russia and also in Ukraine. Uh-huh. That is why I believe there is an increased effort at present by the West and its regional allies in West Asia, including Israel and Saudi Arabia, to weaken Iran.
Do you agree with that, Barry Grossman?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Kevin
absolutely.
Barrett. Sorry about that. Kevin Barrett.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's obvious that the U.S. has chosen to try to fight Russia, Iran, and China all at the same time, which from an American imperial perspective probably isn't a very good strategy. Normally, you try to divide and conquer. So we, you know, the American empire should be trying to be friendly with one of those three at least while beating up on the other two, or better yet, be friendly with two while beating up on one. But they're so arrogant that they think that they can attack all three countries at once. And obviously, the Russians, the Chinese, and the Iranians are not